Powered by Rev Media in partnership with TSN, it is Season 5, and this is Episode 57 of the Ray and Drake's Hockey Podcast, presented by our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey, who have released the delicious CC 15-year-old Sherry Cask as part of the Invitation Series. Signature CC Classic 12-year-old Whiskey Ray finished with a secondary aging in Oloroso Sherry Casks. And I should sound more excited, not just by the introduction of the Invitation Series with our friends at Canadian Club, but the fact that we have got a terrific guest. All of our guests are really, really, really good on the Ray and Dregs podcast.
Sure.
The one today in this episode is out there and up there.
Yeah.
Will Arnett is going to join us. We know Will to be a huge Toronto Maple Leafs fan, and by extension, he's a National Hockey League fan. Very passionate, by the way,
yep.
but also incredibly funny. So credit to you, because, you know, Will will tell the story, at least his version of how you and he met at the All-Star in Toronto. But this is a good get by you. You know, this guy is an A-list celebrity. Good get.
He is. And he's, it's so you can see in like 5 minutes of talking to him why the way that he acts and the way that he does his character things, why they fit, because it's just like he's got 83 things going in his head. He's so sharp. He's like, he thinks of something, now he's got something else, and he's funny and he's passionate and he's loves all kinds of different things. And I saw him at the All-Star game and then I was like, oh, I gotta say hi. And then you hear him talk about meeting some of the players, and he was doing the same thing with the players. So it's, we think, you know, and he is. Will's a global star, and he's just thrilled to meet the guys he grew up cheering for. And so it's, it was really, really fun to talk to him. I mean, it was great that he was able to squeeze us in. That's a busy man.
I mean, one of the most recognizable voices, the face, of course. I mean, he's been in a number of different movies, countless commercials. Of course, the co-host of Smartless with Jason Bateman and Sean Hayes, which is a terrific podcast. But, you know, when you listen to him talk, it kind of reminds me of, you remember James Earl Jones, right?
Oh, sure.
Field of Dreams, all of the great work that he did. But that big kind of powerful, gravelly voice. So
yeah,
we're going to have some fun. We're going to have some fun with Will Arnett today.
And I assume the plans for, like, we're in the last week of the season.
Yeah.
When you're a big fan like he is, it's just getting into the good stuff.
Oh, yeah. So we'll get into headlines here. And I hope our the people that listen and watch us on YouTube on the Ray and Dregs Hockey Podcast, I mean, we're in the meat of it right now in terms of having to look at every scenario. So I hope it's not too eye-glazing, but we're going to do that in just a moment on headlines, brought to you by Tim Hortons, who have the all-new savory pinwheels. They're here, the perfect snack to satisfy your afternoon cravings. Great add to soup, to chili, any lunch or dinner at Tim's. Available at all participating Tim Hortons restaurants across Canada or by delivery. And you can have it all delivered via the Tim Hortons mobile app. So we'll get to the jockeying and the playoff scenarios, mostly in the East as they try and lock up that final playoff spots. But there's some movement available there in the Eastern Conference. First, Ray, the Arizona Coyotes.
Yeah.
Perhaps soon to become the Salt Lake Coyotes. I mean, so just I'll bring us all up to speed here with where it's at, because good reporting by Frank Cervalli, who I believe initially broke, you know, many of the permutations that could happen, that would need to happen for Arizona to shift over to Salt Lake. But most importantly, the recognition, I think, by the National Hockey League here that, okay, enough is enough. Like, you know, to the Marullo family, who are trying to get the land commitment through a land auction end of June, to build an arena that is still years away, just the idea of the National Hockey League playing playoff hockey, which they won't this year, but in the near future, at Mullen Arena, doesn't jive. And they've got Ryan Smith, the owner of the Utah Jazz, sitting in Salt Lake, wanting an NHL franchise. Now, I believe his preference would be expansion to Utah, but hold on a minute here. if you can get a relocation team like Arizona to Utah in time for 24-25 next season, if you can make it all work, you're going to do that. But to make it all work, right, the finances get a little bit, it's a game of chess. It really is, right? So the way I understand it, the NHL would have to buy the Arizona Coyotes from the Marullo family. They would then sell the Coyotes to Ryan Smith in Utah with an added relocation fee on top of that, right? Which bolsters it up into the, $1.5 billion, maybe north of $1.5 billion US. And then, you know, NHL owners get their piece of that pie. But what's interesting is, and a decision could happen sooner rather than later from the National Hockey League, maybe they keep Arizona as that premium expansion spot. So if the Marullos...
Or anyone else.
But let's just give the family the benefit of the doubt. They, you know, they follow through on a promise. They get the land through the auction late June. And they commit and they build an arena. How long does it take to build an arena? Minimum 3 years, right? 3-4 years.
I haven't done one lately.
No. But then they become perhaps option A or an option for the National Hockey League to expand back to Arizona 3 to 5 years down the road. Seems to make a lot of sense, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, the position the league found themselves in by keep waiting for the arena through multiple ownerships to get sorted in Phoenix has put them in a position where I'm quite surprised that the NHLPA agreed to this all down the line. It's cost them, I don't even know how much money in that impacts the bottom line, which impacts the salary cap. And, you know, so like it's just been a mess. And it's an embarrassment to the league that when you think of the Arizona / Phoenix Coyotes, because it goes back that far, is that the first story is the rink. It's never the team. It's never. And it had and has to end. And so you'll probably get to the details of it eventually, but when the mayor of Scottsdale said, no, you can't have any of the water from West Scottsdale, pretty tough to go ahead with the project.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of like, yeah, fine. You can say what you're going to do, whatever you're going to do, but you're not getting any water from here. And it's the desert. It matters. So this is a interesting scenario in the way it's laying out and the speed that it has to happen.
Yeah.
Like we might say like, oh yeah, next year is a long way away. It's not a long way away. Not for this. Yeah. And so
finish your thought.
Yeah, I was just going to say not for that. Like if this has got to get going, if it's going to get going.
Yeah, and to that point, and I'm really interested in, you know, take us back into your life as a player here, because this matters to me more than any of the business side of it, right? It does, because, you know, so now you're a family man, right? You bought a house, you've invested in Arizona, and as much as you hate playing in Mullen Arena, because it's shoddy. It's not NHL caliber. Your dressing room is makeshift, all of that stuff. Are you just, okay, no problem. I'm going to pull my kids out of school, or at least I'm going to have to uproot them. We're going to relocate. I'll eventually sell the house in Arizona, but let's go. I can't wait to get to Salt Lake. Is that your mindset? Because you look at the success of the Jazz, of Ryan Smith, an owner with deep pockets, and you know and you believe that that environment is going to be an NHL caliber environment, and that'll be great for you as a player, but by extension, great to your family? Or do you have all of the reservations?
All of them. Yeah. All of the reservations. There is, when we were in Hartford, Howard Baldwin was selling the team, and there were a couple of different guys that were in the mix to buy it. And that was even just to keep the team there, but there was going to be new ownership. And I'm telling you, Dregs, we didn't get through one day without somebody not bringing it up. like the angst of like, okay, what does it mean if, because then you start hearing stories, oh, this guy would do this and this guy would do that. And it's stressful. It's out of your control. It's easy to say, yeah, we're just going to, you know, the team will move there and everything will be, we'll get settled in, except I'm going to guess out of 23 players and, you know, 10 coaches and staff, I bet you, I'm going to say two have probably been to Salt Lake. And probably have any idea what's there. Wouldn't right. know Salt Lake from Peoria. Like it's just another city. And oh yeah, Ryan Smith is got all kinds of money and he's going to buy a team and he's going to move it there and he's going to either renovate Delta Center or rebuild it or new build to a rink. And and now you start thinking about that. And then you're like, yeah, I got my house. And wait a minute, Clayton Keller committed an 8-year contract to sign there. And that's nice. Pick it up and move it along. And but I think it's also important, right? It's like, it's not just the players. It's not the coaches. I mean, it is everybody associated that works and relies upon the Coyotes for their living, for their job. It is a mammoth unsettlement to everybody's lives there. And it, like I said, it's got to happen fast. Like if the NHL says, okay, we're going to take this to the Board of Governors, they're going to vote however it's going to play out, and then there's a decision.
Yeah.
Man, it is full on logistical move, an onslaught onto Ryan Smith and his enterprise to get organized and up and running for next year.
Well, I'm glad we talked about this because that human element to all of it, it matters. And I don't know that people appreciate it that much. And I was in Winnipeg when the Winnipeg Jets became the Phoenix Coyotes, and it wasn't seamless by any stretch of the imagination. And literally people lost jobs in so many different ways. People lost jobs, and you know, that'll happen again. But
and Dregs, don't forget, you were also in Winnipeg when the Thrashers moved to Winnipeg. Correct?
No, I
mean, you went
Toronto,
back. You went back and covered the story.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. So the same thing happened in Atlanta. I mean, this is not, it's even just in this 3 minutes of discussing it, you can see why the NHL did not want to move.
Yeah.
Why they hoped and thought it could work. And I would say this. I am almost certain of this, is that nobody is going to get an expansion franchise in Arizona with the promise of maybe we could build an arena.
No,
that is never going to happen. So if Arizona is an expansion candidate in the future, the deal will be locked in. It will, they'll have shovels in the ground. Like they got to be way down the road with this, as opposed to, oh yeah, well, if we maybe could and do this and do that. And there's no way the league's going to go through that again.
No. And just to wrap up, because we'll be talking about this many more times here in the near future on the pod. I mean, if Marullo gets $1 billion US from the NHL, it's not a bad payback, right?
No.
In the grand scheme of things, I think he's done okay. All right. Let's look at some of the playoff scenarios. You want to start in the West? I mean, you did that game on Wednesday night, correct? With Vancouver losing to the Arizona Coyotes. I guess the reason that it matters is that now you've got Vancouver. Like, there are so many top of division possibilities that exist in both conferences, but right there is Vancouver and Edmonton for that Pacific Division title.
It is. It's funny, you know, the night before last, LA, who was fighting with Vegas for the third spot in the Pacific, or to drop to the second wild card, they lose to Anaheim. And they lose in regulation. They don't get any points. Like, I was watching that and I go, man, Vancouver's got to be careful here because Carolina's got some talented kids. They really do. Yep. Like, Dylan Gunther was terrific last night. He had a 4-point night. Logan Cooley scored his 19th goal to win it. Connor Ingram stopped a penalty shot on Phil Hronek in overtime, which got me thinking of some possible rule things, but I don't know if we got time to get into that. In any case, so now they get a point. They're 4 points up on Edmonton. They play this weekend. They play Saturday. The Oilers play one game in between then against Arizona. So you would think they would be 2 points back. The Oilers would.
Yeah.
Heading into the game with Vancouver. Vancouver has all the tiebreakers. So Edmonton has to finish in front of them. So you could see basically that game Saturday is pretty much for the division.
Go ahead.
It's pretty wild to think of it. And it also tells you how bloody long the season is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because remember, the Oilers were either dead last or next to dead last in the conference. And that was 5.5 months ago. It's a long season to hold on.
So, you know, we got to book travel, right? When you're covering, you know, this as a, you know, as a playoff broadcaster, you really don't know where you're going until game 82. And then you find out through the schedule makers and whatnot where you're going. We made the maybe mistake. I mean, Winnipeg's two back of Colorado in the Central, but booking travel for me to go to Winnipeg were games 3 and 4. Well, but I mean,
they might not be there. You might be standing in Winnipeg by yourself.
That's good stuff. I mean, it's not good if you're the travel person.
But. No, it's last minute scramble. Hey, let me give you, let's talk about this for a second. So Vancouver's shorthanded. It's a 4-on-3 in overtime. Hronek intercepts a pass and gets a breakaway. He gets pulled down.
Okay.
There's 26 seconds left in the penalty. Hronek gets a penalty shot.
Okay. Yeah.
What if you don't want the penalty shot? Like, I'm not even kidding because the worst scenario played out. He was stopped. There's 26 seconds left. In those 26 seconds, the Coyotes eventually get a hold of the puck and they enter the zone, and before Besser can get into the play, they score. Had they not taken the option of not taking the penalty shot, it would have dropped to 3-on-3. And then when there's a whistle, Vancouver's player would have come out of the penalty box. And then you would have ended up with your own power play for a minute 30.
Yeah. You like the chances of scoring on the power play more than the penalty shot, potentially.
Well, depending on the guy taking it. I mean, and the reason I ask is like, as Hronek was going in, I'm like, I wonder if he's had a breakaway before. Other than at practice, which is a hell of a lot different than...
Much different, yeah.
You know, so it was just a weird, interesting scenario for sure.
But I would say this, and we'll move to the East here quickly, but that's one of those little quirky things that the general managers would have talked about in some way over the years in those breakout meetings at the GM. Meetings doesn't mean it gets to the main group and we in the media find out about it, but they come up with all of these scenarios, and probably 95% of things like that never get public. But I would think that
so let's say that happened 10 years ago in the breakout group.
Yeah,
a lot of the managers have changed.
Yeah.
So last night, what if Patrick Ovechkin writes in his notepad for penalty shot in overtime? You either decline or be able to pick the guy to take it. And then you take it back to the breakout. I mean, the only way anyone the only way anyone ever notices is if you see it. Because I would have never considered that. And I'm like, what are the chances? First of all, what are the chances it's shorthanded, the penalty shots on?
Yeah. Well, sell it to your buddy Kenny Holland, because Kenny Holland and David Poile historically have been the two managers who basically make up the agenda for the GM meetings. So if you can sell it to Kenny, this thing might have some.
Almost see it as I lay this out. He's going to go, like there was what a dumb idea. So anyway.
All right. Quick to the East here, right?
Yeah.
Should we just simplify it? Wash, Pitt, Flyers, Detroit. Who gets that final playoff spot?
So you're assuming the Islanders are in?
I'm assuming the Islanders are in. Yeah. No. I, and Maybe that's, yeah, that's, that might be a leap of an assumption with Washington and Pitt, you know, challenging in
the Metro, I don't think, right? I think Philly's out. I think they're, I think the air's out of the balloon there.
Yeah.
Last day of the season. Well, hang on. So Pitt plays Detroit tonight.
Yeah.
As they would say, as Darren Drager would say,
this is big.
Thanks for picking up. I think Pitt, I don't know why. Why do I think Pittsburgh's going to make it? I thought Mike Sullivan was just hot air what he was saying about 3 weeks ago. We got a chance. We can still do. I'm like, he does not have a chance. They don't have a chance. And now I kind of feel like momentum's theirs.
It'd be fun.
It really feels like it, but it's today's game, really, isn't it? For those two teams. Somebody's gonna leap ahead. And I think we should, you know, we should probably be clear. It's a massive scramble. And there's a team that seems in control today is not in 2 days.
Yeah.
And so, that's the way you want a playoff race to be.
Agreed. I mean, you've got Wash 2 back of the Isles in the Metro. You've got Pittsburgh 3 back of the Islanders in the Metro, 1 back of the Capitals in the wild card. You've got Detroit where it's wild card or bust. I mean, they're 1 back of the Caps, tied with the Pens, 84 points. And then the Flyers are 2 back of Washington, 4 back of the Islanders in the Metro. So that's going into the weekend.
Yeah, I guess we got to touch on just briefly the end of the Islanders-Rangers game.
Right.
Which was that was old Islander Ranger hockey right there, I'll tell you. We used to never get through one of those games without some sort in the game of mayhem somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought the hit, I guess it was Dobson on Trocheck at the end of the game.
Mm.
That, like, honestly, I don't know how that's not penalized.
Right.
It's a dangerous hit to start with. The puck is there. I don't know how. That's not a penalty.
How about Lavi's thoughts? Did you hear him post game?
He was talking about the Zibanejad play, right?
And Pellick, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was a collision. There was nothing more than that, was there? I mean, for him to call it a vicious hit and all of that, I mean, that's just...
That's emotion at the end of a game, that you come out and you do the media pretty quickly. I think Pellick stopped, and his intention was to make Zibanejad go around him. He's allowed to do that. And I think much like when the official ran into Fleury in Tampa, Steve Cazari, I don't even think this would look or sound ridiculous, but I don't think Zibanejad even saw it.
I agree with that.
Because you would think, how could he not see him? But he's looking at the puck. He's got one eye on the bench. And then all of a sudden he's, you know, you run into him and that's how I saw it. I watched that play 10 times. I'm like, what am I missing? I kept thinking I was missing something. And I don't think I was. I thought it was just a collision. And fortunately, Mika, who is a major part of that Ranger team, is okay and returned to the bench at the end of the game.
All right. We've got to run. Will Arnett is standing by. Thank you to Tim Hortons for our headlines.
Tim's new savory pinwheels. They're buttery, flaky, and come in two delicious flavors. Roasted red pepper and Swiss, and caramelized onion and Parmesan.
I like knowing that I have something ready that tastes great.
Tim's new savory pinwheels.
It's time for Tim's.
Our interviews on Ray and Dregs brought to us by Canadian Club Whiskey, who have released the Canadian Club Invitation Series, CC 15-year-old Sherry Cask, all the hallmarks of classic Canadian Club, with the added richness and sweetness of sherry. Ray Ferraro, we've had some A-list celebrities on the podcast before. Pretty much, though, I would say all related in some fashion to hockey. Well, Will Arnett is a huge hockey fan. We know this. Funny, funny dude. Great actor. Co-host of the podcast Smartless with Jason Bateman and Sean Hayes. Will, before we get into the heavy lifting of the interview on the podcast, can you clear the air? Because my sources at the All-Star in Toronto suggest that Ray Ferraro basically stalked you, first to meet you and say hello, but then also to get you on the Ray and Driggs podcast.
Well, you know what, Ray, I'm gonna spare you any embarrassment. That's not true. He was very gracious and very polite and said hi, and I was happy to meet him. Obviously, it was a thrill for me to meet Ray. I'm a fan of what he did on the ice. I'm a fan of what he does now. And so for me to be asked was an honor, to be honest, an honor with a U.
So, we need the Canadian.
So I was really, really happy. I mean, honestly, that weekend for me was such a thrill.
Yeah.
It was like the Olympics of boyhood dreams, you know?
When you're there, like you see the current guys. There's a lot of the ex-Leafs around there. I think Wendell Clark's your guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you met him elevator, right?
Yeah, I mean, it took everything I had to not wear a Wendell jersey on this interview. He's my guy. He's my ultimate. He's the ultimate Leaf in my view, and kind of one of the ultimate hockey players. He was just such an all around great player in every way. And weirdly enough, I'd never met him before. And I've spent a lot of time around the Leafs. My friend, obviously, Shanny runs the team. And so I've been the beneficiary of being able to kind of be around. And I'm actually an ambassador, which we'll get into for the Leafs. But I'm in the elevator at Scotiabank on that weekend. And I've never met him. And I know he knows that I'm a mega fan. And so I don't want to make it weird. And Bateman last year for my birthday got Wendell to send me some golf balls and some sticks and stuff. And he made a real nice video. It was really very nice of him. So anyway, I'm in the elevator with my dad and my good buddy Kutch, who flew in from Calgary to join us on the weekend. And Wendell walks in with his wife. And if you can imagine, I actually shut up for a minute. And Chris King was in there too. And he kind of looked at me and he starts talking to Wendell. And then Wendell's wife nudged him and he turned around. He was right in front of me, in an elevator, like backed in. And then he was just super nice. And he said, "Hey, bud." And we sort of broed out, and it was wild, man. I never thought in my wildest dreams, like when I was a 17, 18 year old kid in Toronto, that I'd have a moment where he'd know who I was. Forget it.
You know what's so crazy about that is like, we're all so excited to meet you. Like, it's like, oh my God, like, we can't believe that we're meeting you. And you're doing the same thing. And when you see Wendell, like, were you surprised? Like, he's not really tall. He's just as wide as a house. And it's like, were you surprised or did you know what size he was?
I guess I had a feeling that he wasn't that tall. I kind of know. I mean, I feel like I know everything about the guy. It's embarrassing. You know, I should have told him, and I didn't want to really put him on the spot. So my son, my oldest son is 15.
Right.
And my name has been Wendell. I use it as my handle for everything, with my buddies, for golf, for video games. When I sign into hotels in Europe, I use his name. Variations of... I swear to God. And so, by the way, people would be like, all right, now we can look for it. But
it's all good.
My 15-year-old son has the same birthday as Wendell Clark. My first son is October 25th. And I'm like, I hear you, God.
That's amazing.
Is that wild?
Cool. So you've been a Leafs fan like your whole life. So I was a Boston Red Sox fan when I was 10 years old. I picked the Red Sox for whatever reason. For 30 years, they lost. They never won.
Yeah.
And like, you never die your fandom. It never dies. Like, so since you've been alive, the Leafs have never won. Do you like this team? Because I think it's a little different. I don't know if they can win, but I kind of like this team. I think it's different.
I agree with you. I think it's different. And I actually think some of the additions that were made this year and kind of later in the year, some of the guys who have taken the pressure off, when you have guys like Bobby McMahon who come up and start and show that they can go on little streaks and score some goals. Yeah. Matthew Nyes can show up on a different line and still be effective. He drew two big penalties last night. They didn't score, but he drew some great penalties. Mm-hmm. He plays hard. You got a lot of guys doing a lot of things. And guess what? Our buddy Mitch Marner gets injured for a while, and Max Domi steps up onto that line mm-hmm. with the greatest goal scorer that's alive, or playing anyway, and keeps delivering on that line. And then you got Bertuzzi, who just he decides he's going to take it up a notch.
Yeah.
For the first time, it feels like, because as you know, this is the team that had a lot of big, talented guys, the core four, everybody talks about it. But it felt like they all took their turn having moments.
Yeah.
Right. But not everybody was working on the same page. Now you got everybody working on the same page. These guys play hard. Every one of them skates back and plays D and back checks. Watching Austin last night lose the puck. I forget who he lost it to, and then he against the Devils, and he skates back, and he ends up, you know, making a nice defensive stick check. Like, this is a team that's thinking about the big picture, I think.
You were screaming for David Kampf to come off the ice with the empty netter, weren't you? Because yeah, Matthews is standing. You can tell he's sniffing 67. You needed a whistle, or you needed Kampf to come off the ice.
Yeah, I think I made a joke last night that Austin, for the next few games, he's just going to be in this position from the moment he gets on the ice. He's going to skate off the bench with his stick cocked, you know?
Yeah.
But it's been – but Ray, to answer your question, I do think it's different. Look, this is one of the benefits of being a Leafs fan. I've been saying it's different. This time I actually it is true, but – what it does give you is you're an optimist. Somebody said, what's it like to be a Leafs fan? I go, I'm an optimist year in, year out, and it's taught me to have an optimistic point of view. I'm not a pessimist. They end up losing in the playoffs, and it's disappointing. It's tough for a couple of days, but then I'm back there, you know?
Right. Well, it's not as much fun when they win. When the Sox won 3 championships in 10 years, I'm like, I kind of liked it when they didn't win. It was kind of really fun that way.
What's more dramatic, right? There's more of a story. Like, you know, and my dad is who's so funny. We'll text about, he'll text me 5 times during the game, whatever. And he'll be like complaining. He'll be like, it'll be November 20th. And he'll be like, oh, I can't believe this. But I go, Dad, relax. It's November.
It'll be okay. You know? It'll be okay.
Yeah.
Now, Will, you mentioned Brendan Shannon. I know you're good buddies with him. You've acknowledged that. What's something about Shanny that we wouldn't know? I mean, we know Shanahan as the player. We know him as the high-ranking exec of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Yeah. What's something about this guy we wouldn't know?
Well, it's funny that you put it that way, but it makes sense that I've admitted that I'm friends with him. It took me a long time to admit that I'm friends with him. And that's just for him. One of the things that I think that people maybe don't know is what a great sense of humor he actually has. You know, he's got a really serious job. He was a serious player who played hard. You know, he scored 656 goals in the NHL. And if you don't believe me, just ask him. And, you know, I'm kidding. But he played super hard. He was one of those guys that, you know, he was of that mold of a tough power forward who could score, who could fight, who played with a lot of passion and was a really smart player, but was kind of serious. Mm-hmm. And the guy that I know is a really fun, first of all, super smart, like just... don't sleep on Shanny. He's crazy, crazy smart, and he's crazy funny. He has made me laugh profoundly a million times over the years.
Now, we're going to step away from our hockey for a moment. We talk about this all the time into something about what you do, which is remarkable. Like, I'm amazed, Will, that you've got fans from, you know, 6 years old to guys that drive trucks, and like how did it all evolve? Like, when did you know, like, hey, I'm an actor, I want to be an actor, my voice is my thing? But like, it's just a wild ride for you to how wide you span.
You know, it's been really, I think it's really unorthodox, probably. I try not to use the word, somebody taught me this a long time ago, I try not to use the words my and career next to each other, because it sounds like I'm, oh, my career, oh, tell us, you know. But the truth be told is that my experience has been you know, I moved to New York to be an actor, and I wanted to be a serious actor because I was young and I thought that was important. Now that I'm 54, I have different aspirations.
Okay, how do you get that in your head? I mean, you're growing up in Toronto and you're like, yeah, I'm going to be an actor? Like,
I happened to do a couple like school plays, and then I took to it, and I was in Toronto and I was auditioning for stuff, and I was like, this is kind of cool. This is the first time I did something. You know, I did like every other Canadian kid. I played hockey growing up. I skied. I did all that stuff, and I was okay at it, and I had a lot of fun. But it wasn't until I actually started acting that I felt like this, I really know how to do this. Like I have a feel for it. And so I decided to move to New York. This is years ago, 1990. I moved to New York. I didn't know anybody. God bless my parents who kind of said, go for it. Have fun. Hope you can earn enough money to keep it going. But we'll talk to you later. And they were great. They were really awesome. And I moved to New York. And then I kind of backed into comedy because I needed to read. I needed to pay the rent. And my agent was like, you got to read for sitcoms. I was so young and dumb that at first they were like, you're going to read for sitcoms. I was like, not me. No, I'm like De Niro. I don't, you don't see De Niro on sitcoms. And then meanwhile, like 10 minutes later, I'm like, yeah, I really need to pay the rent. Yeah. So I'll read for whatever you got, you know? And then I, you know, all that stuff you mentioned, Ray, like doing the voiceover work, I started doing that on the side. I didn't even know what it was. And it allowed me to not have to wait tables anymore.
Yeah.
And I could do the voice and all these things. And now, like I say, I'm almost 54 and I've got like a bunch of different stuff that I do and I'm really happy for. And it keeps me interested. And, you know, I've been making comedies and then I produce this Lego show and then I host that. Then I do the podcast with Sean and Jason.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wrote this movie for Searchlight. We start shooting that, you know, my buddy Bradley Cooper's directing this. We start later this summer.
It's a little cool.
Which is very, like, more serious. And it's wild. Like, I'm living the dream, man.
Go ahead, Ray.
Oh, I say, how many projects can you do at once? Like, is it not confusing? If I got two things going, I'm like, my head's going to blow up.
Yeah.
It is. It does become a lot. But I also, like, I think because when I was young and I had to have a lot of pokers in the fire to try to make a living, I got used to it. We always talk about it, sort of a carny lifestyle. And I mean, by the way, I will say this, Ray, you know what it's like. I mean, Darren, you're based out of Toronto, so you're there. But yeah. Ray, I listened to you on a game, and you'll be at a game in Vancouver, and then the next night you're in St. Louis, and then the next night you're in Boston. And I think about it, I swear to God, I think all the time, I'm like, how the hell is Ray doing this? Like, where?
And don't have to fly the plane. I never fly the plane. I just sit there, right?
but you get it. Like that kind of, you're hustling. And I think of myself, I'm just out there hustling like everybody else. Mm. And it keeps it interesting for sure. It's confusing. I have a lot of people who help me. Right. I'll say that. I got a lot of great people in my life. I'm very blessed. I got a great family who support me. And my kids are awesome. And they get it. And I get to bring them to do cool stuff. And yeah.
All right. Well, Blades of Glory aside, I mean, is there a sports role? Is there something that you could just envision yourself wanting to do at some point in your career?
You know, there have been a few hockey opportunities, film-wise, one TV-wise that came my way that just weren't quite right, but that I entertained because I like, obviously, the world a lot. So that would be really cool. You know, I did the basketball movie with Will. We did that semi-pro right after Blades, actually. Yeah. And so that was fun.
so goofy. I loved it. So
so, I mean, so goofy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I coached Little League for 5 years. And I think that that's something I've always thought about doing.
Nice.
Something in that world. We've our last year we ended up winning, and I would, the video from parents is I'm the first one out of the dugout, like before the kids, like as if I won, you know what I mean?
Stepping over these 11-year-olds.
I know, I was so psyched, and so like it'd be fun to do something. I would like to do something in that world. I'm probably now old enough that I'm not playing a player in anything. I'm going to be relegated to the coach or manager position for sure.
So where I really kind of tuned in was with Arrested Development, which was just like a phenomenal show. And like, what is the difference, or how do you figure out something with no real script and just an outline versus something that's all scripted? Like, which is harder, or are they just different?
Well, you know what? Arrested, I got to give credit to Mitch Hurwitz, the guy who created the show, and my good friend Mitch, and the incredible writing staff. We had great scripts on that, Ray. We really did. Now, we had moments where there was stuff that happened in the moment.
A good show.
But even that, and I'll say this about sort of improvising too, especially on something like Arrested, any of that happened was because we were put in such a great place with a really strong story and really strong characters. So anytime that we came up with something, the groundwork was done by Mitch and his team and these incredible writers. And then you just end up being inspired by it. And if you happen to improvise something that's great in the moment, it's because of the work they did. You know, we get to do, so you do something like that, but then you do other stuff that's a lot of this. I've been the beneficiary of so many great writers, you know, going to 30 Rock and working with Tina and Robert Carlock, Tina Fey, and just amazing to be able to read those scripts and be a part of that. We do a show called Murderville on Netflix, which is much more improv based. And that's crazy, where we just have a premise and we had great episodes with Marshawn and Conan O'Brien and Kenja, and they come on and they have no idea what's going on. And we have an idea of a murder. We got to solve it. And then nobody has any dialogue and we just improvise. And it is crazy town.
So like when you're walking down that road, like nobody really knows what's coming 2 minutes down the strip.
Nobody in Murderville, nobody knows that guest. They don't know anything of what they're doing. So in the first season, that we had never done it before, so they didn't even know what they said yes to. Conan's literally like, I don't know why I said yes to you, because I have no idea what's about to happen. And you know, and Ken Jeong, there's a moment in Murderville in the first season there where we go on and we all of a sudden, it's a close set. He doesn't know what we're doing. We're wearing the exact same outfit. And I go, just follow me when they say action. He goes, okay, and action. And he and I run onto a fake set, like a sort of like a Shark Tank, Dragon's Lair type set. And so he runs on with me and there are all these judges. And I go, we have an incredible product. Take it away, Ken. he didn't know that he was showing up for that. He didn't know what the product is, and I hand him literally a block of ice.
Oh.
He's got to sell it.
that's so good.
And it's so fun. And like, I think you're probably seeing what the through line is here, is that what I get to do is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I get to have a blast. And sure, somebody said, oh, you get to make people laugh. I go, honestly, I get to laugh. And yeah. I'm so lucky every day that I get to laugh at what I do and have a lot of fun. It's the best.
In the pandemic, my wife and I got tuned into Smartless and started to watch it like so many other people. And what you said about you getting to laugh and laughing at other people, like, it's so awesome to listen to, because I don't know that there's much that gets said that you don't see the funny side to. Poor Sean, man. Like, he's got some great things that he's about to say or start to say, and you guys just hammer him.
People say that to us all the time. Yesterday we recorded an episode and Jason and I, but Sean did it to himself, and Jason and I hammered him yesterday. I was laughing so hard. I was in this seat here and I was sent over and I had tears streaming down my face because we were hammering him so hard. But the people go, oh, Sean, poor Sean. And I go, if you knew Sean, if we weren't doing that, he'd be so bummed out. There's nobody who loves it more than him. He loves it. And I feel the same way. If somebody hammers me, I'm to Sean, like Galifianakis hammers me. He'll go out of his way to hammer me. And I will say it's my favorite thing. Or Ricky Gervais, who's a good friend of mine. Ricky says to me one time about a year ago, I'm in London and we start talking about working out. I go, I've been working out. And he goes, why would you need to work out if you're just a voice actor?
Oh, and I start, nice.
And he and I start laughing so hard. It's the burns are the best. There's a moment in there's a moment in the Smartless doc that we did about our tour where Jason burns me about I talk about this interaction I have with Brad Pitt, compliments the show Flaked I did a couple years ago, and he starts saying nice things, and I walk outside with my buddy Chappie and my girl, and I go, oh my God, and I said, yeah, and we're talking to Matt Damon about this, and Jason stops and he looks at me, he goes, who do you think Brad thought you were?
Oh boy.
So who do you think he thought you were? It made me laugh so hard at my expense. It's the best.
Yeah. Oh, outstanding. Will, you're also a very talented impressionist, clearly. Do you have a favorite impression? And could you give us a few seconds?
No, the only, I don't know. My impression that I do that nobody knows is of one of my favorite actors of all time. And it's so bad. It's this. it's and I love him. He's a hockey guy. He's a big Penguins fan. He's Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
And it's from Gung Ho. And I go, you say the Japanese are buying our car plant? That's it.
That's it.
Oh, it's so good. A huge football fan, soccer, football. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Liverpool, right?
Yeah, massive.
Yeah. So I'm talking this morning with my 14-year-old, Reese, he's up every Saturday.
Yeah.
We can see the light on under his door at 5:30 in the morning because it's game day and he's got to watch. And so he wants to know who your goat is. For him, it's he loves Verge. He loves Verge, and he's telling me about Jota that's coming back from injury. And I said, okay, I'll ask Will, who's his guy?
First of all, he's got great taste.
He tells us all the time.
Yeah.
Big Verge is just a superhero. I feel more when Big Verge is back there, I feel comfortable that we're good on the back line. Jota, I always joke with my friends that Jota, he just, the J is for just scores goals.
That's all he does, right?
That guy, he just scores goals. He's unreal. And so I have so many guys, and I would say those guys are incredible. For me, I'm such a Mo Salah guy. Mohamed Salah, not just his goal-scoring ability and his playmaking. I don't know if anybody right now, I mean, obviously Messi's the greatest ever, but his Salah's first touch is unreal. You can Andy Robertson will float a ball right across the pitch. It'll come at him at 100 miles an hour up in the air, and Mo's got it right in his feet without,
It's like glue. However, it's so, like glue.
But saying all of that, my number one guy is retiring as the manager.
No.
Jurgen Klopp is my guy. And I'll tell you when I was doing the thing at the All-Star game, sort of co-captaining, whatever that means, which means I just stood there. I got to have a good seat. Did I tell you this already about Jurgen Klopp?
No.
I don't know if I told you what I said. So I thought, well, what am I going to do with this? I said, I'm going to need to get a speech. So I go online and I grab a bunch of the most inspirational quotes from Jurgen Klopp over the years. And if you look, he's got a million. The guy's incredible. Yeah. So I put them all together in one document. And I say to Connor McDavid, I go, hey, I got a speech to give the guys. He goes, let me know. So we're getting close. And he looks at me, he goes, all right, yeah, go for it. He goes, Will's got a speech he wants to make to us. So we got half the dressing room. By the way, the away dressing room in my own barn. But I'm a big man. I took it well, and So they gave the home thing to somebody else. Again, I've been supporting this team since 1970, but that's something else.
Yeah.
So I'm in there, and I give this speech, this Jurgen Klopp, and it's just all these quotes to our half of the thing. And the other half is the team is, with its Sid and all those guys, right?
Yeah.
And I give this speech, and then the last part of it, and I go, is when I'm really building it, it's from Jurgen Klopp, I go, when I first came to Dortmund, I go, and then I see the guys start looking at each other, right? And I recognize that Dreisaitl knows what I'm doing now at this moment, because he's German, right? And then I go, and they all start clapping. And then I hear Sid goes from the other side of the dressing room, and he goes, I got to say, we were getting pretty inspired over here, too.
It was awesome.
How many times you been to Anfield?
I've only been once, and I'm going again in a couple of weeks for the second to last. I'm going for that Tottenham game. It's his second to last game. I got to hang out with him last time I was there in September, and I've been lucky enough to have some people in common, and I get to go. So I'm going to do it again. Hopefully they win, obviously, against Tottenham. We need to run the table.
Oh, yeah. I've heard last couple of weeks. I'm starting to hear it at home here a lot from Reese, man. He's nervous. He's nervous. Confident.
But they got a lot to be confident about. And all, there's so many great guys. I tell them my new favorite sort of new guy is Szoboszlai, the Hungarian guy, or I call him Szobocop. He is unreal.
I will check with him.
Yeah.
Well, we've taken up enough of your time, but how about a quick Masters prediction? You're a big golf guy, Bateman, big golf fan.
Yeah.
Good players. Yeah. I know all this. Ray has informed me. What's your Masters prediction?
It's pretty hard to not pick Scottie Scheffler right now.
Yeah.
The only reason I wouldn't is the one part, by the way, says me, what the hell do I know? And,
Well, you had the caddy. How the hell did you have to caddy for me?
Well, I didn't really, I just did the last five holes because
that's plenty, isn't it?
Yeah, it was plenty.
You were really supportive, weren't you?
Not at all. No. Not at all.
Good.
He's not playing right now because he's working. So he shot a even par 70 about a month ago.
Awesome. Nice.
He'll be happy that I told the world that. Wow. Believe me. But I would say the one thing about Scottie Scheffler's game is his putting that is a little bit questionable. Has been, but I'd never. I said again, says me, his putting's pretty damn good compared to mine. So I don't know. I would say him. I'd never count Tiger out. It would be pretty awesome to see him light it up. Yeah. I want him to break Nicklaus's record so bad.
Yeah.
I think that would be great. And but we'll see. I mean, well, Nicklaus, when he's not handing out trophies to club champions, anyway, that's a different story. That's a different podcast, you guys.
Podcast. All right, buddy. Look, we very much appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Awesome.
Incredible schedule. How about this? Not to put you on the spot. If the Maple Leafs win the Stanley Cup, are you coming back on the Rain Dregs podcast?
Definitely. Are you kidding?
Okay.
I'm coming. I'll be in studio. Here's the pledge I've made. If the Leafs win, and I made... I shouldn't go wide with this because we'll get people in Toronto will be like, who the hell do you think you are? Hey, like, whatever. I'm driving the bus.
All right.
In the parade.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. That would be something.
I'm driving. I made that call 10 years ago. I said, I'm driving the bus.
I love it. That's outstanding.
Well, amazing. Thanks. And I got to tell you, you and Jason and Sean bring so much joy to people. With the podcast, it's a great listen. You've had an amazing career. It's so fun to watch. It's great to meet you, and thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me on. What an honor and it's been my pleasure and great talking to you guys.
All right, Ray. Well, for me, I mean, as terrific as that conversation was with Will Arnett, the takeaway is if the Maple Leafs win the Stanley Cup, he's coming back on the Rain Dregs podcast. You imagine the shenanigans that would go on? Hey, we'd probably have to do the interview in August because he'd be celebrating for 2 months after they hoisted that cup.
If the Leafs ever win, I can't even imagine what that city is going to be like.
He's driving the bus, evidently.
Well, yeah, that would be something too. Man, what a great guest. Like, his mind goes so quickly, and it's, it goes in 30 different directions. I love how pumped he was to meet Wendell. And, like, he just couldn't believe it. I guess he's going to need a new alias on the road, since he told us about that. He can't sign into hotels as Wendell anymore. I think that's just hilarious. He's got one heck of a career, and he was an awesome guest. That was so fun.
It was terrific
to have him come on.
I sent Brendan Shanahan a note. I just said, hey, we're going to ask Will Arnett about you because I know you're buddies. And chances are he's going to take a bit of a run. And he just responded with some uh-oh and some kind of emoji. So there's probably some pretty terrific stories to be told there behind the scenes.
Yeah, I hope people enjoyed it because we sure did. And
yeah,
it is a it was terrific out of his schedule, which is overlapped all over the place. Just when he's talking about the projects he's got going, that he was able to take 30 minutes to sit with us.
Terrific. All right, man. Thanks for another great week on the Rain Dregs podcast, and hope you have a good weekend.
Thank you. Off to Pittsburgh tomorrow. So Boston and Pittsburgh on Saturday, and then Leafs at Florida on Tuesday. Will Austin Matthews be at 68 goals? Maybe.
Interesting.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think he'll be pushing 70.
Well, he scores every game. Isn't that just the way it goes?
Yeah, it's predictable. All right, well, safe travels, my friend.
Yep. Thank you, and have a great weekend yourself, and to everybody listening, thanks a lot, and we will talk to you Tuesday from Florida.
You bet. Thank you to our sponsors. I'm tired of sponsoring Canadian Club Whiskey and Tim Hortons. Until next time, stay safe, everybody.